Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And we're live tonight. This is January the 10th, 2014. So we know it's not an archive show. It is live. And it's just started to storm here now, making a lot of noise.
The sky has just opened up. I don't know what that means, but...
Because we have been in the ice box. I haven't been out of this house for a week. I've got cabin fever. And we had snow and ice and very cold temperatures. But today it's been raining and it's washed the snow away. But just now, all of a sudden, it's storming. And I can hear it on the skylight. So I hope it doesn't interfere with the show anyway. We got a lot of psychic energy out here. Okay, but I have a special guest tonight, and her name is Carol Pate, and some of you may know her. She's a very famous psychic. She has been on many TV shows, and Carol, I think we might go back over 30 years. I know even longer than that we've been friends.
Oh, yeah, well over 30 years, probably about 35 years.
I think I first met you was in the 1970s. I was thinking about that today.
Uh-huh.
That's a long time.
Yeah, a long time ago.
It was back when you were doing the psychic fairs down in Little Rock. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, at Pershing, right off Pershing there. And North Little Rock, sure was.
Yeah, and
that was your name wasn't
in those days. But we've been friends a long time.
Yeah.
But I think we're over-talking each other here. Okay. We got to be careful of that. Okay, let me give out the toll-free number if anybody wants to call into the show tonight. It's 1-888-627-6008. 1-888-627-6008. And Carol is a professional psychic, and you've told me before, I want to go back over this again for the ones who don't know who you are, that you've been working with the police since you were 12 years old. Isn't that true?
That's correct. Absolutely.
You want to tell
me? I worked on my first murder case then.
Because you say that you're still working on... I'm trying to catch up here. I haven't talked to you for a couple of years. You said you used to do 300 to 400 murder cases a year, didn't you? Are you still doing that?
Yes. No, it slowed way down. Thank you.
You're glad of that, I guess.
Well, my norm was about 200 cases. And then when...
For a while there, he said it was getting very stressful.
Yeah, it was. It was very difficult.
And you still work a lot with missing person cases also, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I work with everything. You name it, I work with it.
Just go ahead and tell the audience how you began in all of this way back then.
When I was 12... There was a classmate who disappeared. His name is Harry Lance. And the police came to see me at my home and told my parents they wanted to talk to me. And they took me outside and they said, we think that Harry came to see you. And they handed me his picture. Well, when they handed me his picture, I started flashing and I saw that he was hunting in the pasture with a Hispanic boy, and I saw the boy carrying a rifle, and the boy tripped, and the rifle went off and shot Harry in the back. And I told him that he was in the back of where he lived in the pasture, and that they were going to have to search the area. Well, they did, and they found him, and all of that was true. The boy did accidentally trip and fall and shoot him in the back. So I got a little bit of a reputation, which is tough for a 12-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And then when when I was about 16, I broke a drug and prostitution, five-state drug and prostitution ring with the FBI. And then when I was 21, I got one of America's most wanted, 10 most wanted murderers. So it was kind of fun.
You really started out young, though.
Well, I have a question. You said
sure.
The police came to see you and said that they thought Henry had come to see you. Where was that coming from? I mean, surely they didn't think psychically, were they?
No, and Harry and I didn't get along, and there was no way in the world he would have come to see me. I didn't like him. He didn't like me. But I had developed a reputation in school for knowing things that I shouldn't know. Like telling my second grade teacher her husband had left her, but he was going to be back in a week and everything would be all right. You know, little things like that.
Okay.
So that's why they came to see me.
Uh-huh.
I think. They never did really tell me.
That's strange in and of itself.
Yeah.
It is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But I think I think you said even as a little girl before that, though, you always were psychic, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I saw spirits always. I would know things always. I was counseling adults when I was 7 years old with their marriages, no less. That was weird. So, yeah, it was a part of me. I didn't know that I was any different than anybody else, to be truthful with you. But I started learning that I was quite different. And, of course, they started calling me a witch. And I was a Baptist, for Pete's sake. I wasn't a witch.
So how did your family feel about that?
My mother didn't know what to make of me. She didn't know how to deal with me. My father, he beat me whenever something of this kind happened. Later on, he explained to me that his family was Cherokee, that his aunt was a medium, and his other aunt was a clairvoyant, and his mother was an Indian medicine woman, and his grandfather was an Indian medicine man. And he had been really kind of tormented by people because they thought they were witches and warlocks in Tennessee. So he was trying to curb me out of my gifts because he didn't view them as gifts. He thought it would bring unwanted criticism and maybe people would be cruel to me because of it. He didn't realize he was the one that was being cruel.
Exactly. That doesn't make any
sense. It's sad.
It is sad.
Yeah, because they're going the opposite direction there. And, of course, it probably turned you against him when they act like that.
Well, I always loved my father. And I always had, like, a knowing of why he did what he did. So, no, it didn't turn me against him. I was just really saddened. But the thing was, I never could turn the gifts off. If I could have, I would have. I didn't like being different.
Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of people say.
Hard.
They wish they had these gifts, but then, like you've told me before, when you're in the middle of it, you really don't like it.
Well, how would you like being murdered? And then find yourself being the murderer and feeling what they feel. It's pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
now,
what you told me.
Thing,
you know, you told me when
pardon?
You're working murder cases that you get it from both viewpoints of the one
Absolutely.
Being murdered, the murderer.
Absolutely. It's not fun, but if you can catch a murderer, it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Are there many that do that? I've never heard of that.
No, we know other psychics, but I'm sorry, I'm talking over you again. What did you say?
No, I just said I couldn't hear you. You're kind of breaking up.
Okay, it's probably the storm. I was saying I hadn't heard of that before, of psychics, you know, going into both sides and like that, both perspectives. Is that, have you heard of others doing that? Is that normal? I mean, not normal, whatever normal is, but... do you know of many others that work this way?
In truth, I've never talked to somebody else that does what I do.
That's what I was thinking. You may be it.
The one and only, very unique.
Right.
No. I know there are, but I've never been able to sit down and talk to them. We've all been like lone wolves.
Right. There probably aren't very many of you, I think.
When I was doing Psychic Detective, they said that they had only found 11 nationwide.
Wow.
You know,
you're a rare.
They did several.
You're a rare species.
Apparently.
Then. But that's why you're able to help with the murder cases, because you can get it from the killer's viewpoint too, and help, you know, then the victim, you can pinpoint who it is a lot easier.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I was working a case in Texas, and they took me into this trailer where five people had been shot with a double barrel shotgun. It was really awful. And when I went in and I touched in, I heard the murderer call his wife on the phone. I heard her name. I heard her calling his name and telling her that everything was going to be okay, that he had gotten the money that he needed for them to have their baby. And it turned out that he was the nephew of the man that he killed. So it solved, it wrapped up that case really fast.
Wow.
Okay, I want to tell the listeners, too, that Carol was on Court TV for quite a while. The shows, was the Psychic Investigator and the Psychic Detectives. Those are the ones, wasn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. A&E was Psychic Investigator, Court TV was Psychic Detective. I was, I guess, one of the first. Yeah, literally one of the first. I interviewed with Larry King live for that show. But I did talk to Larry. I talked to Nancy Grace. That was really kind of neat. It brought verification. It took the psychic out of the woo-woo, out of the fortune-telling, into how useful and what they could provide. And that the good that they could do. So I was real pleased with that.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. They said we got a caller. Let's see what they want. Hello, who is there?
Hello, this is Vicki.
Hi, Vicki.
Hi.
Hi, Vic.
I have a question. My son, Justin, he's 30 years old, but for the past 15 years, he's given me so many problems with drugs and the law enforcement. But, you know, when I was in the hippie days, I gave my parents a lot of trouble, but it was only for a couple of years. And I don't know, he seems to be getting better. He got married, and they're going to have a baby. But I guess I want to hear that things are going to go well now, instead of him driving me crazy. And I don't know what this connection is with he and I. It's
funny. I'd love to help you, but I work using psychometry. In other words, I take a photograph and I touch into it, or a sample of writing and I touch into it, and I can't really give you that kind of information over a show like this. I wish I could, but I can't. I have to be honest
with you. All right.
So Carol, can she call your office and make an appointment?
Sure, absolutely. Do you have something to write with?
I do, uh-huh.
Okay, it's area code 501-888-8056.
Okay, and what state is that? I'm in Arizona.
That's Arkansas, Little Rock, Arkansas.
Oh, that's right. Okay, Arkansas. Okay, well, thank
and
you
I can
so
do
much.
The work
thank
over
you, Dolores.
The
thank you, Vicki.
Thank you, Vicki.
Yeah. That way, maybe she can send you something and you can help her that way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I do a lot of that work.
I know there's
not
so many
problems.
So many people out there that have problems, and it's hard to help them all. I know that. But we do what we can anyway. But
that's it.
I know on the shows that I watched that you were on, they were like reenactments of cases, weren't they?
Yes, they were. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they were really, really cautious to make sure that everything was very, very factual, which I was really pleased about.
I would say this whole field is such a leap forward. Because, you know, they've said times, you know, they had psychics working with investigators, but then they were trivialized and things. But it sounds like from the beginning you were taken seriously. I mean, they invited you in. So is that what you found?
I did find that. I never really had a major problem in that. I would always let them test me out. I would tell them going into a case, I don't want to know any information about the case. All I want is a photograph of the victim, and if there are people that you think had anything to do with this, mix them in with other pictures of other individuals, and then we'll go from there. And then I'd touch into the pictures, and I'd tell them what I started to see or pick up.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would move into a photograph or go to the location where the crime actually took place.
And
I had them record everything.
Right.
Hmm. Because, so you know, you hear about so many psychics that want to help, but they usually made fun of, and they're not taken seriously. I think it's wonderful that they work with you. They still work with you on cases.
Oh, yeah. I never had that problem. I had that problem one time. Well, there were a couple of times when they were spooked by me. They were afraid of me. Or they were afraid that... There was one case in Truman, Arkansas. They were afraid that I was up the devil.
Well, look where you were. aren't from this area, they don't understand. This is the Bible Belt. And immediately where they go.
Give me the same problem too, Carol, but most of them where I live don't know what I do, and so I can be under the radar. But, yeah, they immediately...
Well, you got to watch that hypnotism stuff. That's of the devil.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Anything they don't understand has got to be with the devil. Doesn't matter how many people you're helping. But this is the Bible Belt, and they're still, like many of them, like that here.
They are. I've been very fortunate in that I've been really nicely received by people. I've talked in churches and synagogues. I've not had a lot of problems. It's very, very rare. And I'm not sure exactly why, except that I handle things in a practical way, I think.
Right. So they can't dispute it.
Down to earth.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that
Hopefully is a step forward.
The people are beginning to accept it now. But look at the history you've got. I mean, hundreds, it must be thousands of cases by now. If you were doing over 300 a year, that's so many.
Oh,
they you can't dispute it after a while.
Well, when I started doing psychic detective and psychic investigator, that's when they just overwhelmed me with cases. And I finally had to do the one thing I didn't want to do, and that was I had to up the cost on the case, $750 a case. And that was so that I wasn't working five cases a day. It weeded out people that weren't super sincere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But before that, I mean, I wasn't charging the police or anything.
But has to, or you'll be overwhelmed.
I was overwhelmed. Yeah.
Because I know I have I've got an 8-year waiting list for my stuff, so I know sometimes people, they can get to take advantage of you, and there's a little too much. But everybody needs help, and they're grasping at anything, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't blame them, you know, but there's only one of me.
Exactly.
And I have
That's
to
what
take
I tell people,
me.
There's only one of me, too.
There you go.
Yeah. Of course, I'm teaching it, but you can't, I don't think it's that easy for you to teach it, is it?
I do teach workshops where I help people to open up some of their psychic abilities, and I teach them what their abilities are and how they can heighten their own gifts. And I teach them what it's all about so they alleviate the fear. That's
right.
The big thing.
Yeah.
And I teach people how to do healing work and all sorts of things. I think we're all psychic to some degree.
I agree.
And in these times right now, too, we found a lot of the psychic abilities are coming back. They're reopening
again. I'm finding a lot of young people that are very gifted.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're going to replace us.
It's all part of the changes we're going through right now and the way everything is changing, that they are getting their abilities back and opening up to it. Maybe they aren't getting the criticism anymore like they used to.
Well, I think like what Carol was saying, they just need to be taught not to fear it, because that's what I've seen is a lot of people are afraid of it. And that's from the generations before them, and that's their teaching. But that's the biggest message I have to people is just don't be afraid of this stuff.
It's natural. Because even at our lectures,
absolutely,
you always say, everybody's breathing, aren't they? And that's natural.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the gifts are as natural as breathing.
Correct.
If they'll accept it.
Well, I think a lot of people were taught that psychics and fortune-telling was of the devil. And I try to teach people, I'm not a fortune-teller, I try to teach people that we are all psychic, that the devil does not have any gifts to give. He can only twist them. And that God gives all gifts.
Mm-hmm. So, especially when you're using these gifts for good, like you are.
Absolutely. Well, it's like a surgeon, you know? A surgeon hopefully will heal people with that scalpel, not kill them. But it's his gift that allows him to do it correctly.
Right.
Yeah, but look how many years they burned us at the stake and hung us and all of that because they were so weak.
I don't think they ever really killed a psychic.
I'd like to say, we're back.
Yeah. You didn't get rid of us. We're back.
Well, you know, we've been around since the beginning of time. I don't think anything's going to change.
Right.
Okay.
And there was a time that they used to call us prophets.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, the Bible is full of prophets, and they don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
But it's just that nobody's supposed to do it past the time the Bible was written. Nobody else is supposed to be able to do it.
Well, you know, though, I never saw where that was in the Bible.
Well, that they weren't supposed to do it?
That's right.
Yeah. No, it's not there. I don't.
It's not there.
No.
In fact, I found places in the Bible that I quote to people where they say you should be doing these things.
Absolutely. Christ said, what I do, ye shall do in greater.
Yeah. I can show them the verses in there where they said we should be developing our psychic abilities. But, you know, in addition to all this other work, and you've got your plate full, you've also done psychic work all over the world, too, haven't you?
Yes, ma'am, I have. I want to fill
the audience in on the wide scope that you have, that you've been doing.
Where do you want to talk about?
Because Carol has traveled to Egypt, and you've been down under the Sphinx paws, down into the tunnels there, haven't you?
Actually, no, they never opened up those tunnels. They opened up the tunnel that led to the tail of the Sphinx, but they refused to open up the other layers. There's like 9 chambers under the Sphinx.
Mm-hmm.
And the major one is underneath the right paw of the Sphinx, and it runs about 200 feet down. And it's 90 feet long.
Wow.
Because you told me one time they lowered you down in there, and there was a lot of water down in there. They couldn't go all the way.
That was an adjoining area that actually was where the tunnel was. And the tunnel was capped by a black sarcophagus marble. Lid, and it went around 30 feet down, and it had been a well at one time, and it dried up. And when they opened up the lid of the sarcophagus, that's when they found that's when they found the tunnel that led directly to the tail of the Sphinx, and it was filled with water.
Hmm.
That was Dr. Shore, Joseph Shore, A-R-E, and Boris Said. That was a trip that I went on with them. And J.J. Hertek,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. who wrote the Keys of Enoch.
Right.
That yeah, we know him.
Amazing mm-hmm. trip.
Oh, I bet it
Pardon?
Was. We know him. I bet it was an amazing trip.
Oh, it was. It truly was.
But
it's
I know
one I'd like to do again.
I was just going to ask, have you been recently? Or I don't think they're doing much right now.
The last time I was in Egypt was in 2010. It was before they had the big governmental overthrow. And the people were very, very angry. Everywhere you went, people were just angry. And the poverty level was really bad. And I knew that there was bad things coming.
Hmm.
And I hate to say it, but I was glad to leave the country. It felt so negative. The whole area felt negative. And there was an ice storm while we were there, which was really strange.
That is strange. What time of the year were you there?
March.
Hmm.
Well, you're very sensitive to vibrations and things anyway of places. You pick up on a lot of that.
Oh, I do. I do. It felt like it was ready to blow.
Well, apparently it was, apparently.
Yeah, it really was. It really did, as a matter of fact.
I think,
but
you didn't
get... not been back.
Did you get to do any exploration or anything in 2010?
Yeah, we went to the Ballet of the Kings. and that was pretty neat. We went to there was a tomb of a young prince. He was probably 8 years old, maybe. And they told us to make a circle around the tomb and hold hands, which I thought was odd. And when we did, I swear, this is going to sound really bizarre, but this cobra, huge cobra, popped up in front of me and tried to bite me. I know this sounds really weird, but it looked like a painted cobra. And I realized that it was the protector of the child.
That's what I just got, yeah. It was just like his guide.
Mm. Yeah, it was like his protector. Like they'd put a protection around the sarcophagus to protect the child, the body of the child, the soul of the child. But that really startled me. It just shocked me.
Did anybody
that
else?
That was kind of trippy.
Did anybody else
Pardon?
See it or anything like it or any?
No, just me.
Just you.
Just me.
Just
you. Of course, just me.
Mm.
I jumped. I really jumped.
You'd be the only one anyway that'd pick up on something.
I know. Everyone said, well, I want to see it. Well, I said, I wish you could.
Well, Julia was there, I think it was in 2011.
It was.
We were in Europe, and we had 3 months in Europe, a different country every week where I was teaching my classes. And she wanted to go on to Egypt because she had some people there that wanted her to come.
Well, we were trying to see if we could work up a tour, something like this trip, like what Kara was on, something like that around a class. But what's funny was it's like there was a window created. I slipped in between two skirmishes during all that turmoil because it was like it all happened and then it died down and I got in there. And, I mean, everything was fine, and they were like, oh, we wish the tourists would come back. We wish, you know, I mean, it's really, really, we need the money. We need the business. And then they were just starting to come back right before I left. And then right after I left, it all started up again. So it was like there was just this little window that I slipped in and out of.
Hmm.
You were very fortunate.
That's how I live.
I didn't go on that trip. I went to Rome and met up with her in Rome. But she likes to tell the adventure that she went into this pyramid that people don't usually go into.
Well, no, it's not.
Well,
it's one that's out there. It's for anybody to go into. It's just it's out of the way. So.
She's always been very claustrophobic. But that this time it got her over being that. I don't think she'll be claustrophobic anymore.
No.
Which pyramid?
It was. I'm wanting to say it was the.
You said the red.
The red. Do you remember a red pyramid?
Oh, the red pyramid. Okay.
Where you go out the outside of it and walk and go down the shaft.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that was it.
Have you been in that one?
I've not been in it. I've been to it. We were searching for some things around that area.
Yeah, it's kind of out there by itself. It's not.
Uh-huh. It is.
Mm-hmm.
But she did something. I still can't believe she did it because of her being so claustrophobic.
Well, when I got out of it and I was done, it felt like it was an initiation. I think I was finishing something that I had started a long time ago. So.
That would not surprise me. You might have been part of the, maybe helped to build it.
I don't know. It that's just the feeling it had, and it took everything I had to go down and do it.
Oh, so. God. Yeah, that's a very tight fit.
Yes.
I don't know that I'd want to go in there.
It was very narrow, you said.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Well, it's bad enough in the Great Pyramid.
Yeah, it's smaller than the Great Pyramid.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's what they kept telling me. They said, if you can do this one, I mean, I didn't know that's what we were going to be doing. And they said, oh, if you can do this, then the Great Pyramid will be a piece of cake. And I'm like, okay. And it was. Yeah, the Great Pyramid's nothing. It's like this huge huge thoroughfare you get to go through.
After you go through this.
Yeah.
Did you go into the Queen's Chamber in the Great Pyramid?
Yes.
Okay, that's where you really have to bend over. And
I'm trying to remember.
It's really kind of uncomfortable.
I remember, well, there's a lot of, oh, goodness. It's funny how, and there were a lot of people in there. That's what I don't like. The Red Pyramid, there weren't many people, so I had privacy, which is what I needed to go through that. The Great Pyramid.
That's because nobody wanted to go in there. It's too skinny.
The Great Pyramid, there's so many people, and I'm trying to remember. You know, they had some of the parts closed off, so maybe it was the King's Chamber I went into, not the Queen's. I don't remember.
Did you go up, or did you?
Yeah, I went up.
Yeah, you probably went to the. Yeah, you went to the King's Chamber. That's much more comfortable. It's not really, really bad. Queen's Chamber is straight ahead. There's like a brown door, and they lock it off.
Yeah, it would have been locked
off.
It's more difficult. I remember there was a part locked off.
Tell her the feeling you got when you were in there, though.
Oh. Yeah, when I got in that pyramid, the first one, not the Great Pyramid. The Great Pyramid didn't really have, it was too many people there. But the other one, you know, when I got in there, because like I said, it took everything I had to go down that shaft. And then when I got down there, I'm like, man, they must have been small people to do, you know, to go through that and everything. And the guy that was with me, he said, well, this isn't made for people. People didn't do this. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. You know, you can tell that, you know. And then I got in there, and it's like, this isn't, you know, they keep saying it's a burial chamber or whatever. It's like, no, I got the very great feeling it's a machine. I felt like I was inside of a machine.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Does it make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. That's probably where the shaft that they put the tomb. The sarcophagus through. Do you know?
I don't know. I mean, because there wouldn't have been. I mean, you know, they put rungs on there so you can climb down, but there wouldn't have been anything. It was just in four smooth sides. It's not made to climb or do anything in.
No, that's what I mean.
It's just straight down.
It would have used.
Oh, it's an angle.
Yeah.
But you couldn't carry anything down.
No.
Right.
Slide. Maybe that was it. It was a slip and slide. Because you could do that.
Did you ever get to Thebes?
Hmm?
Did you ever get to Thebes and the Valley of the Kings?
You know, I'm ashamed because I saw so much. They did. They were trying to show me what would be seen in a tour, like a 7-day tour, and they did that in 3 days. And so I don't remember a lot of the places. It was so much compacted in this. I don't know the names. I don't remember the names of what I was seeing.
Hmm. Yeah, probably didn't have enough time
to that, but
register
that. Pardon? I'm sorry, I missed that, Carol.
Those are dangerous times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, one thing she said, though, she was surprised that the Sphinx is very small compared to the pyramid.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, because, you know, we see the picture.
And there's more hills there than you'd ever dream.
Exactly. There's hills, and yeah, you can get these different perspectives. You know, you climb all around it. And I was in a flat that you could actually from the balcony of it, you could see the Sphinx and the pyramids. I mean, it was just right there. You could touch it. But the Sphinx looked like a little puppy dog. It was just it was different. It wasn't what I was expecting.
Yep, I understand. It was quite
breathtaking. You would have wanted to go down inside the Sphinx, though. But then,
I don't know.
After you did the other, you
anything,
probably could.
Who knows? I don't put limitations on myself anymore.
Not anymore, anyway.
Who knows what I'll see?
Okay. Okay.
And did you, were you saying that, she's been doing some investigations or doing some things in other places?
Yeah, where was it that, was it China, about they had you find the Shogun's treasure?
No, the Shogun's treasure was in Japan.
Japan, I think either China or Japan. Japan, okay.
Yeah,
we just got back from there.
It was like $2.5 billion worth of gold that Shogun's had hidden because there was a civil war that took place in Japan, and the people overthrew the Shoguns. So they hid the gold. And they brought me there to try to locate the gold. And, of course, the gold had all kinds of curses and spells put on it by the priest. They brought me right in the middle of all that mess. And they never told me a thing about what I was doing or what I was looking for. I told them, I said, I know that I'm here to find a treasure and that it is covered in curses and spells. And they went, yes, ma'am. That's all they would tell me.
Okay.
And?
We did locate the area, though.
Okay.
And they were going to try to uncover the treasure, and there was a gigantic earthquake.
Oh, wow.
And so it didn't get uncovered, and they were afraid to do anything with it. And I was told, I told him, I said, when you try to take that treasure out of there, there's going to be a huge catastrophe that will put a stop to it because they don't want it moved.
Right.
And sure that enough, that's what happened.
Yeah, that's part of the guarding that's on it.
The protection.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
They're not going to let it be found.
No, they won't let it. They'll let it be found. They won't let it be uncovered.
Uncovered, yeah. Because in my work, I found there's a lot of things in the pyramid, too, that are not allowed to be uncovered. There's a lot of hidden knowledge there and hidden records.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So did you ever uncover anything dealing with a disc?
With a what?
A disc underneath the pyramid.
A rift.
Disc.
No, a disc.
The only thing I found is there are tunnels that go all the way down into the underground cities. And they see, you know, there is a whole lot of cities underground. In the, you know, back further. And they said the entrances are always under pyramids. And I don't know if the bay entrance was put in first and then the pyramid on top of them or what. But you said... you've heard there was a disc down underneath there?
Yeah, I've heard there was discs underneath each one of the three pyramids.
What do you mean
by that? I'm just curious if you've heard anything.
No, I haven't heard about that. You mean like a UFO or what?
No, not a UFO, but probably placed there by them or part of it. Because when I was working on that, I found out there was hieroglyphics that had been found, papyrus had been found, that the Egyptians said that they had worked with Pleiadians and various races from the stars.
Yeah.
And so it's in their records.
I'm trying to think of a disc.
That.
I'm trying to think if you mean like a disc that has writing on it or what?
Probably an activating disc, something that would activate.
Oh.
Energy, energetically.
It was in China or something. They found that cave that was all full of discs that they knew it come from.
I don't know that.
Outer space.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Yeah, they did, didn't they? That were placed there by some beings that had crashed. They're kind of like forms of grays.
But they've been trying to decipher them, but, you know, it's like everything else. You can't, it's very hard to do. You can't decipher these things. But I wouldn't be surprised that there's something inside the pyramids.
Yeah,
no. Well, I know that there's something inside the chambers under the sinks, because they did a sounding. Becky did a sounding, and he found that there were articles of metal, wood, and we don't really know for sure, inside those chambers. Mm. And, of course, Edgar Cayce said that the records from Atlantis were there as well.
Yeah, I believe it. That's what I've got. There's a lot of hidden records that were put there. Because in my work, I found the survivors of Atlantis went to Egypt, and they were instrumental with the building of the pyramids, and there's a lot of hidden records that were, some of them were put in the walls, but they said they're invisible to anyone that isn't of the right frequency.
Absolutely.
So that's why it's going to be almost impossible for anyone to find them and decipher them.
When it's time.
That's part of the protection system, the electrical thing that they have.
I think everything gets found in its appropriate time.
Yeah. That's what they always say. Everything has its time, and it's when it's supposed to happen, it'll happen. But there are more.
I don't think our culture is ready for the information yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, Hadi Zawas has been doing his best to keep it all undercover.
Boy, that's for sure.
To keep
coming
out.
Don't get me started.
They said he's not in charge anymore, but I think he's still got his finger in there.
Well, the last time I was in Egypt, I went into the second pyramid, Khafre. Mm-hmm. And at one time, there were hieroglyphics on the walls. They weren't actually in the pyramid walls, but there were white walls that had been placed in there because it had been used as a tomb. And the last time I went in there, they were gone.
Mm.
And I asked what happened, and they said that he removed them, and they have disappeared from Egypt.
Hmm.
Huh. Well, that's what I've heard. He's trying to keep anything from being found that's going to dispute their history as they know it, you know?
Well, I hope that's the only reason.
But, you know, they're very strict about who goes in there and does anything like that. But are you still allowed to go in and do investigations, or are they getting stricter?
In Egypt?
Yeah.
No. No, you can't do anything. The government's so messed up right now. You can't do much of anything, to my knowledge.
Yeah, because we were trying to set up, we were doing a cruise over there at the end of 2011.
Mediterranean
cruise, and we wanted to put Egypt in on that, and we couldn't do it. They said there was too much turmoil. They had the ship, nobody was going there.
I feel sorry for them because they're so dependent on tourism.
Majorly dependent, yeah.
And I think
what about Alexandrite? I mean, Alexander. Sorry.
Yeah.
Can you still go there?
No, we went to the... we went all around the...
We went on the other side. We didn't even go to that part of the Mediterranean. We were in the Greek Isles.
We went to Athens and the Parthenon and Ephesus in Turkey.
And Rhodes.
Rhodes and, you know, that area. We went around that part.
Okay.
So we didn't go on the other side.
Yeah, they just kept us all the way away from it.
Yeah.
Well, we never know what we're going to do next anyway. Well, do you have anything coming up that you're going to be doing? Because you do tours all over the world, too.
Well, I was. I'm not right now. My husband's been very ill, so I've been caregiver. Dolores, you understand that one.
Oh, I do. I understand that perfectly. I'm sorry to hear that he's not well.
Well, he's doing better. He had cancer, and he's gotten past the cancer, which is a really good thing, but he's not totally out of the woods yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I have not been able to leave the country and do the trips like I really, really want to.
You've had to cut back on a lot of your activities then.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
But you're still doing your psychic center. You have a psychic center there in Little Rock.
Yes, I'm still working. I see between 4 and 5 clients Monday through Friday. I did a couple of workshops. I'm probably going to do some more workshops in spring, which I really enjoy doing the workshops. They're fun, and people get a lot out of it. They learn a lot.
Yeah, and then you don't have to go very far that way.
Pardon?
You don't have to go very far. You just got to stay right there.
Yeah, and see, I can. He's well enough that he can primarily take care of himself.
Mm-hmm. That part's good then. But you see,
yeah.
4 or 5 clients a day.
Yeah.
Well, me, that's a big job too to do all of that. And you're still working on murder cases and missing person cases.
Absolutely. Yep.
Well, we're coming down to the time to stop. The hour went very fast. Mm-hmm. Tell people how they can get a hold of you if they want an appointment.
Oh, all they have to do is call the center. It's area code 501-888-8056. And we're glad to schedule your appointment. I have Carol who works there, so there's two of us, Carol, and she'll be glad to tell them whatever they need to know to schedule the appointment. I do appointments over the phone just as easily as I do in person, so I take people from all over the world. I have clients everywhere.
Just so they have something that you can hold and get the vibrations off of.
Yeah, I have to have a real photograph. It can be a digital, but it has to be on photographic paper, and or writing in ink or a personal item that nobody else has worn, you know, like a ring or a watch,
right.
Something of that nature.
Okay, so they can contact you then if they need help or want a session.
Yep, and if they have ghosts, I can deal with that one too.
Okay, well, I try to say it gives you a rest, but it's not, really. You're working 5-6 days a week, just not traveling out of the country.
I love my work. Yeah, I love my work.
You have to love your work to keep up that kind of a schedule.
Yeah, I'll do it
but
till the day I die.
You've been busy the whole time I've known you. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's coming time to close. It's coming time to close, so I want to thank you for being on.
Well, I thank you for having me on.
Yeah, because we
always enjoyed talking to both.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And you just keep up your good work and stay healthy.
I'm going to do that. You too.
Okay. All right. And thanks, everyone, for listening tonight. And everybody stay warm.
Yeah, warmer now.
Okay, good night, everyone.
Good night, Carol. Good
night. Good night.